It's almost 3 years since Indigenous footballer and former Australian of the Year Adam Goodes retired from AFL after relentless racial abuse. A documentary about his experiences, The Australian Dream, hits Australian cinemas on Thursday. Goodes' story opened up a national conversation about racism. But how much has really changed? Stan Grant is the writer and narrator of The Australian Dream. Stan, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Adam Goodes retired in 2015 because of the racial abuse he suffered on the field, online, and from some corners of the media as well. Has anything changed in your view?
I think that's probably the wrong question in a sense, Hilary, because, you know, we talk about racism as if it's something that we overcome, as if it's something we move on from, as if it's something that we deal with, when in fact it is deeply embedded, not just in our society, but in societies everywhere. Has anything changed? Well, right now, the National Rugby League is going through another racism case where Latrell Mitchell, a high-profile Indigenous rugby league player, is dealing with his own racial abuse, and just today has said that he's taken phone calls from Adam Goodes and others inspiring him to stand up and to call this out. This is something that Indigenous people, particularly Indigenous athletes, I suppose, in the most high-profile sense, deal with every single day. But there is the racism that we see in terms of racial taunts, racial abuse, the booing that Adam went through. And then there is a very deep structural racism that's embedded in our history, the legacy of which means that Indigenous people today are still those more likely to be locked up or to die or to commit suicide or to have the worst health and housing and employment and education outcomes of any other Australian. So it is something that is built in that we have to deal with every single day, and not something that we can simply say we can move on from or something we can put behind us.
When it comes to sports people in particular, you mentioned Latrell Mitchell, and we saw also last week Ben Simmons, the NBA basketballer, Australian born, coming back and talking about an experience of racism he endured during a holiday home, and media commentators including Alan Jones saying he should just go back to America and stay there. Do you think the Australian public and the media have a problem with sports people speaking up about their experience of racism?
I think that Australian media, some sections of it and some sections of the Australian public as well, not only has a problem with high-profile sports people standing up, I think they have a problem in recognising what racism is. And then when people who are the subject of racist attack call it out, they're the ones who are put on trial. They're the ones who are questioned. They're the ones who are seen to be making a problem. And that's what you get with something like Ben Simmons, who says that, you know, he experienced what he saw as racial profiling. Now, rather than say, okay, what happened there? How did you experience that? How can we deal with this better? Immediately, the response is to call him out and say, well, you're just making this up. It wasn't racism. You're overreacting. And if you keep going on like this, you better go back to where you came from, effectively, even though he's an Australian living in the United States. But this is the problem, I think, Hilary, is that for Indigenous people or people of colour to speak about these issues is to put themselves on the defensive, because the loudest voices, the dominant voices, are the ones who establish themselves as the arbiter of all of this. They will sit there and make the judgment about what racism is or isn't, rather than the people who are dealing with it. And I'd like to think in the film, what we've tried to do is to centre Indigenous voices, other Indigenous footballers, other Indigenous people, to speak from their perspective without having to speak back against white Australia or defend themselves against white Australia, but to actually speak from their Australia, how they see the country and what they experience. And it's something Australia struggles with, the fact that people of colour, Aboriginal people in Australia particularly, have a voice, have an experience, and have every right to express that without being put on trial.
And the film is so clear about how Adam Goodes has been politicised and his identity has been politicised since those incidents. But it also reminds us that he entered the national psyche originally as someone who is just an incredible footballer. Let's hear what football originally meant to Adam Goodes.
I was such a shy, quiet kid growing up who really didn't have a voice. It would take a long time to make friends, and then before too long we'd move away. But one thing that helped us assimilate was our love for sports. My brothers and I, that was the way that we broke down those barriers every time we moved.
Stan Grant, sport can be an incredible unifier for Australians, but is that tribalism always a good thing?
Look, sport, particularly for Indigenous people, has been an avenue to move into wider society, and certainly an opportunity in terms of, you know, financial socioeconomic benefit to be able to get a foot on the ladder. And, you know, there've been Indigenous players and footballers and athletes who've been very high profile over the years, and increasingly so. If you look at the AFL, more than 10%, I think, are Indigenous players. In the NRL, it's getting up to around 13-14%, and, you know, this is from a population of fewer than 3% of the general population. So it has been a pathway, and Indigenous people have brought so much to sport in Australia through their capacity and abilities, but also in terms of raising awareness. Cathy Freeman, Nova Peris, Adam, as you mentioned, others who have tried to seize those opportunities to raise awareness. And in Adam's case, particularly around issues of reconciliation and racism. So, but that's not to deny the fact that people are continually confronting obstacles and hurdles. And one of the things, for instance, that's always jumped out at me is that Indigenous players may find a place in the game, but where are Indigenous people in the higher echelons of the game? Where are the Indigenous people who are prominent in commentary roles, media roles, who are coaching, who are administering, who are running these games? Given the outsized influence and representation proportionally, you would think that we'd be at a stage now where some of that decision-making processes would be directly involving Indigenous people, and still, largely, those voices are locked out. So you still have a structural issue, even though you have a greater level of representation and participation.
And you talked before about the structural racism as well as the individual instances and the casual racism that players as well as the broader Indigenous community suffers. Let's hear from Indigenous footballer Nikki Winmar talking about the lead up to one of the most iconic photos in Australian sport.
I said to Gilbert, did you hear what they're saying out there before we ran out the first year, bros? Don't worry, we'll fix that on the scoreboards.
I said to him, bros, we just got to play deadly today. Let's run a mark and let's stick it up these mob. Me and you both get best on ground today.
It was very frightening at the time. Like I still see it today, I can still hear him. Then I was called a black and they're going to kill my family, they're going to find out where we live. I just looked around, raised my jumper and pointed my mosquito and said, I'm black and I'm proud.
And that is an incredible moment in the film, Stan.
Yeah, it was.
I can still see them, I can still hear them today. That impact has obviously gone down the decades. If you've never been booed or called names on the field, it might be hard to understand how it affects people. What is it about those forms of abuse that's so damaging in what is effectively someone's workplace?
Well, first of all, no one should have to deal with that. No one should have to tolerate that in as you say, in what is your workplace. But particularly when it goes to who you are, your race, your identity, your family, your history, your culture, and how vile and vicious so much of this can be. I mean, what Nikki went through and Gilbert McAdam was referring to was absolutely despicable. It wasn't just booing. It was people yelling out that they would rape their family, murder their family. People are talking about people being hanged. And just the vilest abuse, and it rocked Nikki particularly. That moment stands as one of the most profound moments in Australian sport. I think it's on par in Australian terms with that image from the 1968 Olympics of Tommy Smith and John Carlos, the two black American athletes who raised their fists in a black power salute at the height of the civil rights movement in the US in the 1960s. That is our moment when Nikki points to his skin and says, I am here. this is who I am, and I am proud of who I am in the face of those howls of abuse. But it's not to say that in spite of that courage and strength and defiance, that those things don't cut very, very deeply. And in my own life, you know, I've experienced that when I was growing up as a boy, and when people would say things to you, when comments would be made within earshot of you deliberately to demean you and hurt you. When I would see, you know, my father, for instance, not served in shops, or when we were served last, those little humiliations that are put upon people, which are meant to diminish you as a human being. And as much as you can stand up to that, and we're encouraged to stand up to it, as much as we're told to let it pass and to walk away and ignore it, those things can really strike very, very deep. And it takes a very big toll. And it also demands, and this takes a big toll as well, demands that you stand up and speak against that. And that can be an enormous burden to have to carry.
And Adam Goods stood up and spoke out against some very powerful figures too, including Eddie Maguire, after the incident where the 13-year-old girl at the football match called him an ape. Why did you choose to include Eddie Maguire and interview him in the film, given he had at one point been part of the chorus of commentary that had hurt Adam so much?
Because it's not just a snapshot of what happened, you know, to Adam. It's something much bigger about our country, and I think we needed to hear those voices. We needed to hear people explain how they see this. And Andrew Bolt is in it, for instance, and Andrew still maintains that this was not racism at all. In fact, Adam was at fault for calling this out, and I think that is an important context and perspective for people to hear, so that the audience can walk away and say, well, okay, on balance, how do I see this? It happened. They were voices, and it is a moment in time that the film needed to capture. The film is more than just that moment in time as well. It's about what is deeply embedded in our society, the legacy of our history, and that those voices are still voices that we hear today. To leave them out would have been only giving part of the story and would have been a bit disingenuous. It is something that we confront. These are attitudes in our society and voices that need to be heard. And in Andrew Bolton, Eddie's case, they made themselves available to come on. And in Eddie Maguire's case, he has looked at that and said that maybe, you know, he did say the wrong thing and he would regret the things that he had said. But those voices needed to be heard alongside the voices of others to give people an accurate depiction of what was happening at that time and what was being said at that time.
We're talking with Stan Grant, political journalist, TV presenter, author, professor of global affairs at Griffith University, and writer of The Australian Dream, one of the documentaries out at the moment about Adam Goode's experience of racism within one of our major football codes here in Australia. Stan, you've said that we've been hearing a lot since the release of this film and the other documentary about Goods, The Final Quarter, about how they're a wake-up call for white Australians. But what's been the effect on Indigenous Australians of this whole saga?
It's always, it's tough, you know. It's tough, Hillary, to broach subjects like this, because inevitably it involves revisiting things of great pain and great hurt. And when you see your own people in chains, as you do in this film, when you see what happens in our history, when you're reminded that, you know, there were battles fought here, there were massacres committed here, people taken away, and the devastating impact of children taken from their families, in Adam's case, directly because his mother was taken from her family. We're very mindful, and I'm particularly mindful, of the impact that that can have on people and the emotional burden that Indigenous people carry, even in bringing these stories to light, even in bringing your voices to this. And, you know, and I pay tribute to the people who appear in the documentary, because it takes courage to come on and to say these things and to risk the fact, you know, that you could well be howled down for that. So it's tough. It does take a very, very big toll. And it's part of the difficulty in reckoning with who we are and dealing with the legacy of our history, that we have to revisit things that are very, very traumatic. And you know, I know in Adam's case, it's been very difficult to even watch the film. Very difficult for me to watch it and to be involved in it. These things are a deep wound that people, you know, we all carry within us, and we risk reopening those wounds when we tell these stories.
And Stan, you've said that to move on, you know, you don't do that with laws and parliaments. Mm. You do it by stories. Mm. What kind of stories need to happen to change this conversation to help us all move on?
You know, I think every nation, Hilary, is a story, much more than it is a set of laws or parliaments or politicians. It is a story. It is a story of who we are, what brought us here, how we see ourselves. And, you know, I've been very inspired to write about these things in the past few years, to explore where we connect and where we don't connect. You know, for Adam and myself, and in fact the majority of Indigenous people, we have Indigenous and non-Indigenous heritage. We are born out of the history of this country. And we, you know, in my own case, that space between us is the space that I like to be able to explore, to see, well, that space lives in me. It lives in our history. What are the stories that we tell us? And the story of Australia is overwhelmingly, and has been for our history, the story of terra nullius, the idea that this was an empty land and free to be taken by the British, and that Indigenous people live with the legacy of that. And emptiness and terra nullius then means an invisibility of the people themselves, an inability to see Indigenous people and to fully appreciate the humanity of Indigenous people. I'm really interested in exploring stories that refute that idea. We were here. We are here. We have a culture. We have a connection to this country. And I think for all of us, black and white, a true connection to this place will lead to a better idea of what it is to be an Australian. And to say an Australian is a difficult thing for an Indigenous person when we've been traditionally excluded and locked out of Australia. When I talk about being an Australian, it's an Australia that I enter through the eyes of my Wiradjuri and Gummeroi and Dharawal ancestors and my Irish ancestry. All of that connected to try to find a way of identifying with place and belonging and country and citizenship. And we're seeing this playing out right now at our political level with talk of treaties and constitutional recognition, the need to deal with the unfinished business. But this isn't about politics, I think. Ultimately, for me, it's not about politics or laws. It is the power of story. And in story, and I come from a long storytelling tradition, in story, we get to write our country into existence.
And Stan, just finally, since this documentary started airing, some of our major sporting codes want to include it in their reconciliation action plans, and people are coming up to Adam Goods on the street and apologising and saying, I was one of the people who booed and now I know why that was a terrible thing to do to you. Are you encouraged by the shifts that might be happening?
Yeah, I am encouraged, and I was encouraged at the time too that, you know, some may have a different view to me than this, but, you know, I don't see us as an irredeemably racist country. I believe that racism is built into the country. I believe that it doesn't take much to see that come to the surface, and we live with the legacy and the reality of that today. But we also see voices who rise against that. And we saw it during the booing of Adam, when people stood up. Ultimately, it took a long time, but people ultimately found their voice and they said, we stand with Adam. And I think as people come to this film, and if they come to it with an open mind, and they deal with the reality of the lives that Indigenous people have to live, and the impact of that history, and the lived ongoing impact of that history, then maybe it will get them to look at themselves again and their country again. And if that happens, that's part of what storytelling does. Storytelling gives us a glimpse into the lives of other people. Ultimately, hopefully, it leads to a greater level of empathy. And for me, I have to believe in that. That's what keeps me going. That's what I got from my parents, the belief that we can make this country a better country. And Indigenous people have done that.
And Stan Grant, we very much appreciate you sharing your time with us today. All the best for your move overseas in the future.
Oh, thank you, Hilary. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Stan Grant is a political journalist and TV presenter, Professor of Global Affairs at Griffith University, and the writer and narrator of The Australian Dream. It's out in cinemas around the country this week.